live from the NBC News radio broadcasting studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful, sunny California. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show today. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Starr, along with our second host. I want to introduce Mr. Chris Davey. I hope you're on the line. I think you are.
I'm right here. Rob, how are you doing?
I like that. You're enjoying a wonderful day off, but you took the time. What a great guy to call in. I appreciate that.
No worries. Beautiful view of the Moreno Valley here today. I'm sitting on a hilltop overlooking the entire valley. It's great.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool. Well, you and I have been through a lot for the last week. I know I did an event on Friday for Western Municipal Water District, the Earth Night in the Garden. And then Sunday, we did Sustainable Claremont. We had, what, 15,000 people?
Yeah, there was an estimated 15,000 in attendance. That was in conjunction with the L.A. County Ciclovia event. But
wow.
There was artisans, and there was a there were lots of food trucks and things like that. It was a great event.
Absolutely. A lot of people came by and said hi and asked a lot of questions, and it was pretty exciting for that. Got another event I got to do on Saturday. It's in Paris. Local water agencies in the area will host a free water conservation festival on Saturday, and attendees may learn about water use efficiency and conservation. And just so everybody knows, the event is going to, it's a family event, so bring your kids. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Big League's Dream Sports Park. That's located at 2155 Trumbull Road in Paris, and it's going to be a big event. It's sponsored by the Partners in Water Conservation, which is a coalition of agencies in Western Riverside, and that consists of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, California Department of Water Resources, Eastern Municipal Water District, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, Rancho California Water District, Western Municipal Water District, and Southern California Edison. So it's going to be pretty good. What they're going to show is providing information about retrofitting outdoor irrigation equipment, water-saving garden-friendly plants, water-wise landscaping ideas. There'll also be representatives from American Horticultural Society, some master gardeners, to on location to answer questions if they want to ask some things about plants and things, which I know you know a lot about, Chris. I'm not well-versed in it.
That sounds like a full docket right there.
It is.
Right now, I'm actually sitting in the access road above a Western Municipal Water District's reservoir. So that's where I had to go park to get a good phone signal to make this call.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, any vendor that's going to be there, like us, we're going to provide demonstrations, information about water-efficient technologies, such as weather-based irrigation controllers, moisture sensors, our drip irrigation systems, and each agency will have information regarding respective rebates that you can get on our products. So that's a good thing. I don't usually tout our products on the radio, not that we don't want to, but we don't want this to be an infomercial about our products. We've been in business for 104 years, coming on 105. I think our name stands for itself, so we don't have to sit and promote that. And again, bring the kids. They're going to have face painting, arts and crafts, opportunity drawings, and the first 100 guests will receive a special gift. I don't know what that is. But in addition, at 12 o'clock, shows that teach a local children's theater assembly program will perform H2O, Where Did You Go? And I did that with them for a school down in Temecula called, or Murrieta, called Linfield Christian School. And this company comes in and teaches kids about water conservation through music and entertainment. It's really, really good. So anyway, Chris, I'm glad you're having a wonderful day out in the sunshine. I've been working my butt off all day long, so I'm a little jealous of that, but I'm glad you did that. Anyway, we're going to go straight to our news with our most special person that we love, Miss Chris Austin, who is the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. So Chris, welcome to the other Chris, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi, how are you doing? You'll never believe where I am. See, I guess, Rob, you didn't get the memo, because other Chris is over above Western Municipal's reservoir, and I'm actually in Palmdale looking above Palmdale Lake, which is like the water supply for Palmdale. So, you know, you didn't get the memo,
No, I didn't.
You're meant to be out by a reservoir.
But if Chris from Toro, who's in Paris, lights a fire, will you be able to see it from your place? And send you a smoke signal.
No fire.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
yeah, unfortunately, there's a fire ban here too. No open fire.
No, well, that's a good thing. We don't want to waste the water, and we don't want to burn people out either. That's not what we want to do. Hey, I heard the big deal was that all these gubernatorial candidates started debates on water, aside from homeless challenges and all that other stuff. What do you think of that?
Oh, well, you know, we got a bunch of political people saying things. I'm not sure how informed that they are, especially in that debate, the debate setting. I think Travis Allen is saying, you know, long showers and green lawns for all. I'm not sure how you do that, but, you know.
Green paint.
But the very interesting thing will be the Sacramento Bee's Dale Kasler is doing a series of interviews with each of the candidates individually on water. It's something sponsored by the Water Foundation. So it will be very interesting to see what comes out of those, because those are more in-depth. But, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the next governor, because we've had two governors in a row now that have been very active on water, and we may not be so fortunate with the next one. So we will see.
Do you think they just came equipped with cliff notes and not really in-depth enough to have a conversation?
It takes a lot of education to really understand the water stuff. And sometimes the knee-jerk feel-good reactions are the ones that they tend to use.
Well, I would have thought the lieutenant governor, since he makes a big deal how much he's in, you know, he's the steward of water, that he would be the star of the show, with all the knowledge being in office for that long.
Well, you know, you have to remember in a debate there was a lot of things that they had to that they were discussing in that debate, not just one.
Yeah.
One thing, and there's a lot of things that these candidates, you know, have to. You know, address. And
right,
so like you say, it's you know, what you say at this point and what you do once you're in office could be some very different things.
You think?
Yeah, I know. Could that happen?
Yeah, that happens. Chris, on the other Chris, hi. What are you seeing
from the standpoint of historical water use, or what the legislators are saying?
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people who have talked to me, you know, are along the lines of those in the water business, right? The local agencies under Metropolitan and such like that. And of course, you know, as everybody knows, right? Water companies are in the business of selling water, as much water as they can. So open showers and all the stuff that you want to do in green grass. You know, there's a measure of being able to do that, and the hardest thing for the state legislature to do is balance that out. And so it's a challenge every day for them.
Yeah, I guess it is. I'm more hard on them. Like I said, my wife thinks I live for chaos every day. Maybe I do. I just keep hearing about this stuff for years and years and years, and I don't see a whole lot of things getting done. At least that's just my personal opinion. And you know, I know they're busy, but like I've always said, take the top 3 to 5 issues and work on those first and get them solved. Then the next one will float up to the top. You can't fix everything all at once at one time. It's not going to happen. Just doesn't happen. So.
Yeah, I know. But there, you know, there are a lot of efforts going forward, and Chris, maybe you can comment on the California Forward, you know, initiative going on, all the jobs and homes.
Yeah,
and
I thought that was really interesting. The California Forward is a group of business people business and community groups that have come together to kind of try to work on some of California's economic issues, and they have a sort of an ambitious goal to create a million more middle-income jobs, a million more homes, because we do have, you know, affordable housing issues, and also a million more acre feet of water per year. And so these groups are working together to, you know, figure out how to make some of these things go forward. Now, when they talk about that million more acre feet of water, they're not really involved in the tunnels. They're talking about, you know, water recycling, desalination, conservation, those types of things. They're not not it's not really tunnel related, I guess I should say.
Right.
But I thought it's kind of interesting that there are groups that out there that are working on these things. You know, they have a program that they have going with the community colleges to help train workers. You know, the businesses are saying these are the kind of skills we need for the workers, and the community colleges are building programs to address those issues. Which brings to mind the fact that, you know, in the water industry, there are a lot of people, the median age is like 53, I think. I mean, there's a lot of concern about what are we going to do for the workforce? And one of the things that people that are looking for a good job, and I would say a job in a drinking water plant or a wastewater plant would be a very, you know, nice, solid job. So there are programs at the community college level that you can take to get certified to be able to work in the water industry. Also, Metropolitan has a apprenticeship program, as does the Department of Water Resources. So, you know, there are ways out there for young people. If they're looking for a job, you know, they don't want to take 4, 6, 8 years of college, and they want a steady job, you know, there's a need for these people out there. So, you know, the community college, the internship programs, apprenticeship programs, I mean.
No, I totally think that's awesome. I've always thought, even going back further into the high school things with the trade programs and things that they stopped, I wish they'd re-up those things. And you're right, there's plenty of jobs in water. It's almost like the medical field, you know, with all this. It's a great business to be in. I mean, like you said, for wastewater treatment, for purifying water, for delivery of water, for backflow. I mean, it's a real good business that pays very well. And you're right.
And it's solid. I mean, the city does go, you know, we have some budget problems, so this year we're only going to process 1 billion gallons of sewage, and that's it.
Right.
You know, I mean, okay, they don't have that option.
No.
You know, so if you can get a job there, and if you're competent, you have a job for life, and one that transfers to other places. Doesn't need those.
Yeah, once you're certified or licensed, I mean, that's your ticket to making good money every single year. And
right, you with know, benefits.
Yeah.
And we're talking a community college degree. So, you know, if there's anyone out there listening, you don't want to do all that college, you know, you can just get a 2-year degree, or you can go for one of these apprenticeship programs.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I think that's really, really good. Hey, I hear that the Oroville Dam they're talking about without Department of Water Resources. Is it a possibility to abolish the Stewardship Council?
Well, actually, those are sort of two different stories that you have wrapped up there.
Oh.
But yeah, there was a bill introduced to separate the State Water Project and the running of the State Water Project from Department of Water Resources. They feel they're, you know, it's sort of a conflict because, you know, DWR is a bit of a regulator, but they're also, you know, the seller of water. So people have been talking about this for a while. So there's actually a bill that passed out of committee that will now go for, well, I think it's got to go to another committee to be heard again. Mm. So that remains a possibility. But the other thing that happened in that same legislative hearing is there was another bill that was introduced by an assemblyman who represents part of the Delta to end the Delta Stewardship Council, which was this group. That's kind of been working on a long-term, full-range plan for the Delta and its resources. It includes, you know, water supply and habitat restoration and levees and everything. It's a very broad plan. And he's pretty much mad because the Delta Stewardship Council has, they haven't necessarily endorsed the tunnels, but they have gone on the record as saying that some form of isolated conveyance around the Delta is needed. This is the thing that the Delta folks are really dead set against, is this idea of taking even a portion of the water out in the north and, you know, sucking it under or through a canal or however you want to get it to the South Delta. They want that water to go through the channel like it does now. They think you take that water out in the north and our water is going to be bad. So they're just dead set against it. I mean, there really is no negotiation, I think, for the Delta folks there. They just don't want that to happen, period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they're mad that the Delta Stewardship Council has gone on record as saying that this needs to happen for water reliability for the state. So, but that bill did not make it out of committee.
So, yeah, I've been reading, just so everybody knows, pick up your latest issue of Maven's Notebook. It gives you all this great information, and we're hearing it first from the lady who knows it all. The big discussion I hear now is water and weed. now that it's become illegal, and what's it going to do to the water usage? And
you know, the really interesting thing is that the impacts are not necessarily what you think they would be. The truth is that, you know, if that marijuana as a crop generally doesn't use a lot of water, it really depends on how they cultivate it, but it's not a high water use crop, and it can actually even be dry farm. And if people are growing it indoors and they're paying, you know, municipal water rates for that water, they're very efficient with it. And, you know, so the issue really, if there's indoor growing going on in the city, it's not really water. The main issue is power, because these high intensity lights are suck up enormous amounts of power.
I heard you can grow that though with the people are starting to use LED lights for that. I read an article about that, and it was supposed to be that it can replace those high intensity lamps for.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I haven't heard, but yeah, sure. That, and you know, then, but the point there would be that still the impact to the water supply, not really. You know, because they're very efficient with it, and more of it's a power. And if they can reduce the power, then I guess that's a good thing.
Go ahead.
The main problem is the grows that happen, the trespass grows that happen on public lands, or you know, timberlands that are owned by, you know, organizations, and they go out there and they set up these grows, and they bring a lot of really nasty chemicals with them, and that's the element that really needs to, you know, be addressed. And those are the element that, you know, the gang cartels are involved and everything, and you know, there's a lot of the interesting thing is that there's a lot of people trying to come into the market. They're clearing a lot of land, and they're trying to make these grows. They're not very many of these are going to be able to be permitted. But in terms of output, if all these people that have come into the market start outputting, it's going to be way more weed than California itself uses. And, you know, export is only going to go so long as other states continue to legalize themselves. So, you know.
I don't partake in using that, using the cannabis. But I always heard that people get the munchies and they get thirsty from smoking that. But you made a good point though with the chemicals. You know, now that we made it legal, I'm far from being an expert in what they did to make it legal. But did anybody, do you know, looked into the possibility that if they're treating these or keeping chemicals on these things, and then people smoke the stuff or cook it, that they can get sick?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure that's something to be considered.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I never thought about that until you brought the stuff up about the chemicals, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, it's like this E. coli thing with the lettuce that's going around right now.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, they said 84 people were sick, and 40 something were hospitalized for that, and somebody's having kidney failure because of it. From you, and I guess they traced it back to Yuma, Arizona. So yeah, I freak out about stuff like that. You know, if somebody's buying this stuff and they treat it with chemicals. And I don't know if these people who are cultivating this stuff or putting it together is worrying about, you know, does it have any chemical adverse reactions to people? Who knows?
Yeah, well, I know. I don't know.
Wow, wow.
We need a study.
Unbelievable. Let's see. What? Oh, do you know anything about, somebody was mentioning me to you the other day about legislation, Senate Bill 623, which is supposed to be for this water, the first ever water tax?
Oh, the water tax, yeah. I was trying to think if this is the conservation one or the water tax. The water tax. This is now a Senate, a governor's a trailer bill, and people are not happy about that. This would be to put a surcharge on everybody's water bill of 95 cents a month, and the money would go for getting clean drinking water into these communities that have polluted drinking water, mostly Central Valley and some in the Salinas Valley, disadvantaged communities, our farm workers that have this, you know, really dreadful water, undrinkable water. But there's a lot of opposition to it, primarily by the water agencies who don't want to be a tax collector.
Right.
And
also, aren't these smaller places for water, so then they're not all connected to each other? Is that going to be an issue too? Or
yeah, but you know, there are ways to deal with this. But some of these communities are not all that far from a utility that can provide them with clean water, but you have to build the pipes out there.
Yeah.
And that costs money.
Yep.
And for some that are so remote, there are, you know, they've been looking at a point of use filtration. So, you know, maybe you put something under the sink, something stronger than what you buy at Home Depot.
Yeah.
You know, a system that goes into those houses. I mean, there are ways that they're looking at doing this. The water agencies don't want to become the tax collectors, but the problem is that if you only can do this from general funds, then there's no continuous funding stream for it, and it becomes at the whim of the legislators each year, and that's tough. And I think if we're really going to solve this problem, there needs to be a consistent funding stream.
Yeah, I agree.
And I do think we need to solve this problem. I mean, you know, we do know how to deliver clean drinking water to people's houses. There's no mystery there.
No.
All it takes is money and political will.
Yeah, I heard over the last couple of days, I forget what city it was, where they turned the water on and it was all brown coming out. And
yeah, Compton had some bad water, too. Yeah, they were sending people out to look, you know.
And somebody said it was good. It's okay to drink. Hey.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, but, you know.
No.
But, you know, we have bad drinking water even in L.A. I think the city of Maywood has some, you know, really gross water. But for the most part, you know, most of these communities are in the Central Valley or in the Salinas Valley area. And they're mostly a lot of farm worker towns, very small towns. And the source of this contamination has been the agriculture,
right,
you know, going on around them. The nitrates have sunk into the aquifer.
Right.
So, you know, that's the problem.
Got to be solved. Well, anyway, Chris, as always, it's wonderful to have you on our show every week, and we do appreciate that. And we're going to talk to you next week, I hope, as usual.
Yep.
Great. All right, well, I want to say thanks, and we're going to go to our break, and then we'll be back with our other guests. So stick around. Listen to The Water Zone. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks. Good evening.
Good evening.
Did you know that an irrigation system that has a leak of just 1/32nd of an inch in diameter, that's the thickness of a dime, wastes 6,300 gallons of water per month or 75,000 gallons per year? Well, with more solvent cement experience than anyone on the planet, Weldon formulates their products not just to meet a standard, but to exceed it. Weldon products are designed to provide even greater safety margins, often able to make up for common mistakes or less than ideal installation conditions, reducing the chance for leaks and costly callbacks. Weldon's invention of solvent cement over 60 years ago revolutionized the piping industry. From day one, Weldon has led the industry with their broad range of high-performing solvent cements, primers, and cleaners, bringing unique solutions to professional contractors and homeowners. Along the way, Weldon has earned the loyalty of millions of professional contractors who trust their products and depend on their outstanding customer service, live technical hotline, troubleshooting services, and free training. And because they care about the environment, Weldon was the first manufacturer to develop and offer a complete line of low VOC cements. Their hottest formulation is Weldon 750 Hot Weld, a one-step, fast-setting blue PVC solvent cement specifically formulated for superior, long-term, trouble-free performance. So whether you're a professional contractor or just a backyard do-it-yourselfer, choose Weldon, the trusted global leader in solvent cements for leak-free plastic piping systems. To learn more about their complete line of products or technical training, visit the web at www.weldon.com or call their technical service hotline at 877-477-8327.
Let's talk drought stress. No one likes burnt plants or grass, especially your customers. So when it's hotter than a tin roof in Tallahassee, what are you gonna do? Water the problem away? Not only does that abuse a vital resource, it's illegal in many cities. Here's a quick and easy solve that won't get you in trouble with Mother Nature or Johnny Law. Applied is a year-round program. Moisture Manager from LESCO supplements regular irrigation by attracting moisture to treated areas, thus making the moisture available to plant roots. This maintains wettability between waterings and rainfall, allowing soil to accept water as it becomes available, and making the water more accessible to the plant roots. Boom! More green, less watering, and a great new reason to see your customers on a recurring basis. With LESCO Moisture Manager and Site One, high heat is no sweat.
Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Show with Rob and Chris, and we have a good guest coming up, something I read about a couple of weeks ago and I thought was really interesting. We were going to bring on a gentleman named Jason Van Buskirk, and he's with a company called Green Site Agronomics. I'm sorry, I'm moving my papers around, and I should be talking instead of reading. Anyway, Jason started working on a golf course as a 15-year-old kid with the goal of making enough money so he could buy his first car. We all remember doing stuff like that, mowing lawns and all that. A lot of strenuous months he was hooked, and he knew that turf management education was going to be a goal. I didn't go that direction because I didn't like mowing lawns or raking leaves or any of that. Anyway, after graduating, he graduated from Rhode Island University in 2006. He joined Oakley Country Club in Watertown, Massachusetts as an assistant superintendent. And after two quick seasons, he was called back to the course he found for his love for that, Slow Acres Country Club. And even though it was a lateral move, he had more responsibility and more freedom to test his decision-making skills. After 6 months, he would find himself in the right place at the right time, and at 24 years old, Jason was the new superintendent of a 36-hole property. That's pretty cool at 24 years old to have that responsibility. So he must be good at what he does. The path was certainly unique, and most even may consider it to be a fast track to success, which it has been. After playing host to multiple state, regional, and national events, Jason started to grow curious about other passion, technology. And while he spent 10 years as a turf manager, 8 of those as superintendent, he was ready to launch a lifelong passion of technology and marry it with turfgrass into a business venture. So we'd like to welcome Jason Van Buskirk from Greensite Agronomics. So good evening, Jason. Thanks for joining us all the way from Boston.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for the introduction. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I couldn't give you enough justice on what you've accomplished, and that's something to be very proud of. So.
Yeah, it's been a long passion of mine, you know.
Absolutely.
Probably since I was 12 years old to technology.
So you guys like to play. Why don't you tell us a little about how your company, how the company started? I know you're the vice president of sales and marketing, but you're into drones and software and sensors and everything, and that's pretty slick.
So the company started with a model to save water. And we all know that water is a somewhat of a hot commodity and soon to be a very valuable resource in certain sectors of the world, mainly in the United States and in different areas. And so knowing the experience of our CEO and COO and what they've done with their own visions in their past career, they were playing golf and said, you know, why is this golf course you know, so dry? And how do we improve this environment for the actual customer? And they saw a business opportunity, and like anybody that has a business opportunity or an idea, they're serial entrepreneurs in a sense. And you know, so let's take our drone technology and our drone experience and build a hardware / software for this environment. And then they started saying, well, we can branch this out to, you know, wineries, vineyards, and you know, crop farms and tree farms and various, you know, likes of that behavior. As of recent, you know, we're experiencing with solar farms and you know, using the technology from the sky that most people, for, you know, up until today even, you know, charted up as a toy. And when you really dive in and look at, you know, the actual aerial imagery that's being provided, you know, it's quite profound. Especially with, you know, coming from somebody that has, you know, the experience on a golf course that I do, I immediately found it, you know, very fascinating and intricate, and a lot of fun. So.
Drone, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say, Jason, hi, this is Chris. Welcome to the show. Like you, I started off on the business end of a shovel, right, many, many years ago. So just can you tell us just from the timeline standpoint, from, you know, how long it's been since, you know, the days in your saving for your car to where you are today?
I graduated high school in 1998. And I graduated college in 2002. So I was saving for my car, you know, when I was 15, and here we are almost 20 years later, where I'm, you know, sitting in the seat of, managing sales and marketing for a drone company. You know, I still remember the days like it was yesterday. I sweeped the car pass and walking to the bunkers because I didn't have a license to drive a golf cart. So, you know, when I get on the phone or I sit down face to face with a superintendent and I say, I know what you do, or I know where you've been, and I know what it takes to actually manage your property, and how we're going to actually help you do that. I mean, I truly mean it. I truly do mean it. And I know that this is a passion of James Joel as well, but you know, this is my passion, to improve the quality of superintendents' lives, or turf managers, or farm managers, or crop managers, or really just improve the overall quality, because manpower isn't exactly, you know, at our beck and call, and when you're flying, you can certainly, you know, not certainly take the place of a person, but you can, you know, you can certainly add to the value of the overall company.
No, these drones you have, I mean, I know I've been reading that some of the people that you have are well trained in military kind of drones, the big guys, but the ones that you use are not that same size, right? They're just smaller ones. So, or are they the big ones?
No, they're not big at all. For shipping, and well, not for just for shipping, for flying, you know, we're one of eight companies in the North American continent that is you know, approved to fly beyond visual line of sight, so BVLOS, and you know, obviously to some that's normal speak, and to others that's, you know, somewhat gibberish, and, you know, so, in order to do that, however, our drone needs to come in under the weight of 5 pounds. So the drone is essentially manufactured with a 3D printer, and carbon wings and carbon feet, so that when the drone flies up, and we can't fly. I mean, it's light, but it's robust in the sense that we can fly in winds up to 15 knots, and still keep its path. Probably neat to me, and I think would be neat to most to hear this, is that the drone itself is manufactured in-house. It's not something that we're, having manufactured overseas or, in other parts of the country. It's right in Boston, in the workshop/office. We have all the parts. We order the parts that are necessary. We solder most of the, boards and build the drone itself in order to prepare for a customer. And so.
Now, do they own it, or they hire you as a service to go there? And I would assume, since they're smaller drones, it's not like you're sitting on an airbase and you're going to send these things 500 miles away, right?
No. So, our tagline is drone in a box. If you're a golf course and, we're in Boston, so if we were a golf course in California, like a recent customer in California, La Rinconada, Kevin Breen is the superintendent, and so we take the drone and we ship it to the facility. We have a pilot or a trained, onboarding pilot into the area, physically go to the site and set everything up, install the proper hardware that's needed to receive the signal from the drone, and that BTS receiver that's mounted and set up inside of the facility is then responding back to our home base in Boston. And I joke with superintendents or, other folk that it's almost like our pilots are our big kids playing a video game. But they're super serious. Well, they're not super serious. They're actually quite funny and a lot of fun to be around. But they're super serious when they go up to fly. And the process is, the superintendent texts or calls into the pilot in Boston and says, "Hey, we're ready to fly," and they put the drone out on the pavement, and up and away the drone goes. So they fly about 150 acres of property. It takes about 30 minutes, and depending on the true flight path and pre-designed flight plan that we have, that our director of flight ops or other flight members of our team decide on, and it takes the pictures, and then it lands back and downloads the imaging to the portal, and the superintendent and his team get a signal, an email alert, your images are ready, and from there you're ready to see your pictures.
Well, I understand you have what's called a multi-spectral resolution, so you can even see small pests and disease issues before they're visible to anybody. And I think you're the only one that's doing thermal mapping of moisture. Is that true as well?
That is also true. So we have three cameras on board, linear and speak, and one is just a high res, high resolution. So you can zoom, you can zoom real, real close to the actual property, to almost to the point where you can actually see, the number of teeth on a bunker rake. And you can pick out that you might have a Toro workman in the fairway, and you can pick certain things out that are on the property. And then, our other camera is GSNDVI, so, near infrared. For layman's terms, we pitch it as a, this is our available chlorophyll in the plant. So it shows you a turf health image of, what does your turf actually look like? Or if we're on another, agricultural property, we're looking at crops, what does the actual health of your plant, look like? And, it's dialed into a level of detail that you can actually, like you just said, pick out certain imperfections on that plant because of the colorations and how it's, being done. So
And we have Dr. John Kaminsky from Penn State as an advisor on our team from a diagnostic level, from a pest level. And, you know, we can, you know, poke him and prod him and ask him for his, you know, ideas or definitions and what he feels might be, you know, necessary to go out and investigate. You know, the neat part about it is, you know, we don't want the superintendent or the farm manager to feel like, you know, we're replacing him or her. We're doing this so that when you look at your imagery, you're like, aha, you know what, I need to go look at the sixth grain. Something's going on there. Or, you know, I need to go look at, you know, crop Y and, you know, field three because, you know, something's going on there. And it sends alerts or bells and whistles. You know, as a superintendent myself in the past, you know, people would often ask me, how long does it take you to drive around this property? You know, it was 36 holes of golf and, you know, 350 acres. I was lucky to get around one golf course in 2 hours. Hmm. So if I can have my drone fly your golf course in a half hour, think about the amount of time you're saving in what you're doing. So, you know, in my favorite camera on board, you know, is, you know, the True Thermal. And like you did say, you know, it picks up, you know, certain isolations and heat from the property. Now, we've all seen, you know, thermal resolution with, you know, flare cameras and things of that nature. But as a, like I said, past superintendent, when I fly the property with the drone and I can see variations on your property that are, you know, emitting, you know, surface temperature variation, I actually tell superintendents to use this imagery and turn it into a game of color. So let's not focus on what does our property look like from a moisture level, what are the numbers like. Let's not get too dialed in and detailed with that level of analytics. Let's take this color map now, and if our fairways are running pure and where we want them, and they're a hint of orange on our thermal map, well, then let's leave them a hint of orange, and let's play a game. Let's turn our fairways up with irrigation if we want to slow them down, and let's turn them down if we want to speed them up, or greens for that matter. So, you know, it's really neat because our greens are blue if they're cooled off. And our greens are red, guess what, if they're hot. So, you know, it's when I show superintendents the, you know, the thermal map, it's like, okay, I get it, yeah. You know, I need your service.
How high does the drone have to be able to pick all of that up? Is it 500 feet, 100 feet, 2,000 feet? I mean, how
so, do it's 400 feet.
Okay.
Typically speaking. Now, you know, ideally we like to fly at 400 feet. If you're wanting to be a little bit more dialed in, you know, we can fly a little lower. But for, you know, flight requirement, you know, it's like, okay, don't fly much lower than 200 feet for safety. Don't fly any higher than 400 feet for safety. So there's not a huge zone, of wiggle room. And, you know, we like to try and just be a bird in the sky. You know, we don't want to be this. It's not loud, but if it's flying overhead, you can hear, you know, at 200 feet, you can hear a buzz. Mm. So,
well, none of these super. Oh well, let me do it the other way. None of these farmer owners tell the pilot to fly back to their house and see what's happening with the wife. Or you never get those kind of things, right?
No.
You're legitimate.
In fact, I'm glad you touch on that because I'll spin it and you know, talk a little bit about, you know, safety and privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes we have customers that say, well, you know, hang on, I have members that live around this property. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're concerned that this, you know, imagery is actually going to showcase their yard or their physical property. And we take that very seriously, you know, and we're actually talking with the country club here in Boston. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, they have the best quarterback of all time to live on their property. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Tom Brady doesn't want the drone flying over his house.
Yeah.
And even though it's going to, because it borders the property. So we have to make sure that, you know, it is grayed out at a super high level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really made sure that
we take privacy to a really, you know, high level of necessity.
So no one's going to see those pictures on those National Enquirer magazines or anything.
No.
We had a neighbor, and we were sitting out by our pool last summer, and all of a sudden my wife says, "What's that?" And we look up, and I guess they bought their kid a drone, and it was flying over our property. My wife trying to find something to knock it down, but we didn't have anything to do that. She got worried about it. So you have some new, some great technology, from what I understand, from software things, and then you have what's called an ET map, which is, for our listeners, is evapotranspiration maps, and it helps manage irrigation like nothing else, from what I hear. How does that work? And then you can actually see, you send the information to somebody's cell phone even, right? So they can manage it.
Right. So, you know, with the wonderful partnership and, you know, investment from Toro physically, you know, we're going to be embedding our mapping in the physical irrigation controller. You know, so the Toro Link system will, you know, host that imagery so that, you know, let's say we're going to put the golf course to bed at night. We want to see that physical day's image. We can overlay that with an irrigation map and say, okay, you know what? I want to turn this up, or I want to turn this down, or I want to run greens for a little longer because of what my map showed me at my 2 o'clock flight. And like I was saying to you, you know, previous, you know, we're still in the method of figuring out from an analytical level of here's the actual data, here's your actual numbers in front of you to be able to water based on your ET. Because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of science that needs to go into that, and you know, a lot of, you know, physical ground moisture being able to shoot from the sky. So and there's still a lot of, you know, like I said to you before, you know, I don't want superintendents to feel like our drone's going to replace them, because managing grass or managing crops, period, is an art form.
Right.
You know, you know, some guys like their fairways to be red on our thermal map or our ET map. You know, other guys like their fairways to be pure green and in a slight, you know, tinge of blue, and that's what their membership desires. So it's difficult in that sense. And I oftentimes tell guys to, let's turn this into a game of color and not necessarily a game of numbers.
Right. So the farmers and or a golf course, I mean, I know what our links system does, but how often does then the drone have to fly? Because I know there's sensors that irrigation companies use, like soil moisture sensors, and they have weather stations. And, you know, to me, the ET data says when you need to water. I mean, I'm looking at a complete feedback system. So when you have ET information, it tells you when you need to water. The soil moisture sensors say, okay, how much that you need to apply. So having that and then incorporating that with the drone technology and your thermal imaging, how often do you have to fly that to get the information? Is it once a day, once a week, once a month, or how does that work, and how do you package that to your customers?
So that's a great question. I mean, ideally, I oftentimes tell, you know, customers that twice a day, you know, so two a days. Let's fly once in the morning, and then let's fly again, you know, in the afternoon, you know, mid-sun, you know. So sun time is high and dry, you know, just after lunchtime or right before, you know, between dusk and lunchtime. And so let's fly again and then, you know, take a half hour to fly the property and figure out what the hot points are, you know, your pain points even. And so we fly every day, twice a day, to get as much data. I mean, you know, images, pictures, colors, you know, we have math scientists on our team, image processing scientists. You know, one of our guys, his official title is a computer, I think is a computer visionary, where he writes math equations for pictures. So when the pictures come back to process, what is that picture telling the end customer, the end user? So, you know, it's really intricate. I mean, it's more intricate than most people even give it credit for. And so, you know, not to be too long-winded on the answer, but you know, we fly twice a day if the customer desires. You know, we tell customers, let's fly in the morning during dew. Let's try and search for disease, because we all know that disease is more prevalent during, you know, dew formations and,
right,
you know, early morning rise. And then let's fly again in the afternoon, because we're going to pick out different variations, different pain points on the property that you didn't see in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so your pictures are now becoming another data set in your arsenal to then manage your property at a more intricate level. Like, you know, and I say this, you know, slightly joking, slightly not, what we're doing isn't really that necessary. 20 years ago, you managed your property just fine without a drone or without this science or this technology. However, when people raise their game and they raise their bar and they raise their expectations, how do you match that expectation with other technologies that are available? This is, you know, this is a way to raise that bar. Okay, well, I expect my golf course to be this. Well, how are we going to get there? Well, we're going to fly drones now, and we're going to, you know, we're going to use the equipment from the sky to get to that next level.
Yeah.
So.
And conversely, for a farm operation, I would assume they want to get the biggest amount of crop yields on the smallest part of, or the smallest part of property, and they want to use the least amount of water, and yet keeping the crops, you know, in A1 condition, so they can draw the most money or collect the most money when they bring it to market, and that's got to be a challenge in itself.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned. You know, I say this to superintendents all the time, that farmers are 10 years ahead of you guys. You know, and superintendents consider themselves to be like cream of the crop, like, hey, we're the best, you know, we're managing, you know, grass to a super high standard. You know, farmers 10 years ago were using technologies that superintendents hadn't even heard of.
Mm.
So you're 100% right about that, because crops are look, it's what we put in our mouths. You know, people live off of what farmers are doing, and so they naturally have to, and then they themselves live and die by their crops. So if they have a bad crop, then that's not good overall for the entire year. And so, yeah, everything needs to be precise and managed at a high level. And, you know, crop yield needs to be high, and, you know, input needs to be low. And like you're saying, water and, you know, chem or pest or fertilizers. And, you know, how do you manage it all? You know, you're managing not just, you know, like golf courses. Okay, yeah, we have 150 acres. Well, you know, some of these farms are 1,000-plus acres.
Right.
How do you manage that?
You know, I'd like to ask a question of you, because this is, you know, all this stuff is great, and I'm sure there's a learning curve to it. So what is the average uptake for one of your customers to get the benefit? You know, there's a lot of science, there's a lot of data, as you say, and it's a fairly new technology. It is just it's an incremental management tool that folks can use to make their properties better, ag or golf or whatever the circumstance is. What I'm just curious, you know, how long does it take one of your average customers to really see the value of the information and what you provide?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. However, it's somewhat difficult to answer, because not every customer is going to want the same feedback. Some customers are going to want that. Okay, well, how am I going to save water with this drone? Well, it's hard to quantify, because we don't know what the precipitation amount is going to be for that length of season or year or even. Some customers want the drone to be better, you know, better served as a solution for pest management. And so, which is somewhat difficult to answer, because we don't know, theoretically, we don't know what the history is on cultural practice. We don't know what the history is on overall management of the property as a whole. Other golf courses want to just say, hey, you know what? We just want our golf course to be better. Well, that's in and of itself kind of difficult or nearly impossible to quantify. So when folks ask me for ROI,
you know, I think that's kind of the sense of the question here, is, you know, do you see, here's my short answer. It's going to improve the amount or the quality of your time. So, how valuable is your time? And because it's becoming a, it's becoming